Sanctions and a trade deal top today's to-do list for the European Union. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The coronavirus pandemic has dominated the global agenda this year, but today, geopolitics and trade are back in focus for European policymakers who have been keeping tabs on 10 days of protests in Belarus and a looming deadline to hammer out a fresh trade deal with the UK. First on Brexit, the BBC's Nick Beek explains what's on the negotiating table.
It might sound a bit strange when you think of our digital world, but fishing rights is something which is really symbolic because the extent to which EU boats can go into UK fishing waters is something which is controversial. And also state aid. Clearly everything now is seen through the prism of the coronavirus, and there are concerns about the extent to which different countries can give subsidies and cash to different parts of the economy that might be struggling. They're really interested in keeping what they call a level playing field. And I think, to be honest, over the next 48 hours, neither side is thinking there's going to be a massive, you know, seismic breakthrough. But I think both sides are hoping there can be some progress on these sticking points.
It's not just trade talks on tap. EU officials will hold a virtual summit today to discuss the ongoing unrest in Belarus. The idea of sanctions has been floated. What are we expecting from the talks?
We're not quite sure what's going to come out of this meeting today. Clearly, it's symbolic, the fact that they've got all the top EU personalities being drawn together today. But it's tricky because if you listen to what's happening on the ground in Belarus, it does seem that people are fed up with the man who's been in charge for more than 25 years. So I think it's a delicate one for the EU to take on. But certainly by having this call today, they're trying to show there is some sign of unity and they're talking with one voice. And we'll see what happens as regards sanctions.
The BBC's Nick Beek in Brussels. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Victoria.
Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are taking a pause today after the S&P 500 hit a record high yesterday. Fresh data here in the UK showed inflation rose to 1% in July as shopping and dining out picked up. Meanwhile, oil prices are hovering near five-month highs as OPEC and its allies meet to decide whether to extend production cuts. Australia has signed a deal with pharma giant AstraZeneca to secure 25 million doses of a potential COVID-19 vaccine. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said if the drug proves effective, it would be distributed free of charge and potentially made mandatory. From Sydney, the BBC's Shaima Khalil reports.
Scott Morrison described the vaccine as one of the most promising and advanced in the world. The Prime Minister said he wanted it to be mandatory unless there were individual medical reasons for not having it. Mr. Morrison added that if the vaccine clears trials, the federal government would manufacture it and make it free for all Australians, but that it was unlikely to happen until next year at the earliest. The acting chief medical officer, Paul Kelly, said he expected strong voluntary take-up of any vaccine that was approved for use.
Shaima Khalil there. At the mostly virtual Democratic National Convention later today, Kamala Harris will take the stage a day after Joe Biden officially became the party's nominee for president. The California senator is the first Black woman and first Indian American to receive a major party's nomination for VP. She's only the third female in history to get the nod. Overall, women remain underrepresented in political leadership, according to the United Nations, which says just 21 females serve as heads of state. So here's a question. When you think of a successful global leader, who comes to mind? How about Jacinda Ardern, who's been lauded for her handling of New Zealand's coronavirus outbreak? What about Sahle-Work Zewde, Africa's only female head of state who's made gender equality a priority? Or maybe you think of Germany's Angela Merkel, who's steered Europe's biggest economy through three economic crises. Shannon O'Connell from the Westminster Foundation for Democracy explains what makes women leaders like these stand out.
They tend to be more consultative and inclusive. And we know from effective policymaking that consultation and bringing in evidence tend to deliver better outcomes in the long term anyway. And that approach seems to be very organic to most women.
O'Connell's research shows women are more responsive to their constituents, reduce corruption, and redefine what leadership in practice looks like.
There's a great story in the UK Parliament of Harriet Harman being put on the Defence Committee and the heads of the armed services being asked for the first time ever about the well-being of military families. And they suddenly realized, and that had a knock-on effect of value for money and effectiveness and stability.
According to the Pew Research Center, one thing that prevents more women in leadership positions is a lack of institutional support. Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president, is trying to change that. Last week, at his first joint appearance with his vice presidential pick, he made a point of expressing his unwavering support for her.
Kamala Harris has had your back, and now we have to have her back. She's going to stand with me in this campaign, and all of us are going to stand up for her.
Those 10 seconds represent a turning point in American politics, according to Ella Bell Smith, a professor at Dartmouth College.
To say that I've got your back, what do you need? I'm not talking about an ally, much more somebody that is really in the battle with you.
Biden also ensured that Senator Harris's leadership will be visible.
I asked Kamala to be the last voice in the room, to always tell me the truth, which she will. Challenge my assumptions if she disagrees. Ask the hard questions, because that's the way we make the best decisions for the American people.
Now, as the party conventions roll on, it'll be up to voters to decide whether women leadership advances in American politics. Finally, the festive season is only a few months away. I know, but fewer champagne corks will pop this year. That's because producers in France's Champagne region will cut by a fifth the volume of grapes turned into fizz. The industry body said it was a painful decision, but the best one to improve vineyard cash flow hit by a drop in sales during the coronavirus pandemic. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.